Here's what you can look forward to in today's episode.
Industry-wide statistics that says, you know, here's what how you're going to benefit from being a part of a sponsorship, but also the specific, our fans are telling us in this specific study that they are more likely to engage with your brand because you're associated with the team.
Over the last decade, the market research industry has been disrupted. Our largest agencies are struggling to keep up as their customers turn to newer, faster, and cheaper data sources. Now, we are on the edge of yet another major market shift. Now is the time for us to reassert ourselves as the rudder of the brands we love. Thank you for tuning in to the Happy Market Research Podcast, where we are charting the path for the future of market researchers and businesses. Hi, I'm Jamin Brazil, and you're listening to the Happy Market Research Podcast. Today, my guest is Shelley Boren, Research Manager at the Detroit Pistons. The Detroit Pistons are an American professional basketball team based in Detroit, Michigan. Prior to the Detroit Pistons, Shelley worked in the financial sector for several institutions, including Crestmark Bank and Chrysler Financial. Shelley, thanks very much for being on the Happy Market Research Podcast today.
Thank you, Jamin. It's such a pleasure to be here.
So, Shelley, maybe you could tell us a little bit about where you grew up and how your parents have influenced your career.
So I grew up here in Michigan. If you're generous, you could call it the very northernmost suburbs of Detroit. It was really a small country town here in Michigan. We were close enough to the city, in air quotes, to find, you know, shopping and entertainment and stuff like that, but far enough away that it was still a comfortable small town, you know, to grow up in. My father was a programmer and computer programmer and systems analyst before computers were cool. So I guess that the contribution he most made to my career was comfort with technology, you know, not being afraid of computers when so many of my generation, you know, coming up through high school and into college had that a little bit of nervousness about what computers brought and how easy it would be to mess something up. I had a comfort level and a knowledge about that. My mom was an administrative assistant who worked very hard and set the example for us of putting family first. So she helped me to see how to be a hard worker, but not at the expense of the family and the flexibility that she needed to support them.
Did you find your literacy with computers to be helpful through your educational process as well as your entire career?
Yeah, actually, initially when I went into college, I wanted to be a programmer and I wanted to work in information systems. The university I was at told me I had to pick one or the other. I couldn't, you know, they didn't fit together as easily as I wanted them to. So I just kind of shelved that and went into advertising and marketing instead. But always with that, like I mentioned, you know, the comfort with technology. And then as I went back in to get my master's recently in business analytics, it was the melding of those worlds had finally happened. So it was using the information systems and the programming together, you know, so it's kind of like my career came full circle, but it started with that early comfort level.
Yeah, totally. And in fact, now, you know, we see technology just being ubiquitous in every job function. It even seems like the higher you get, the more you have to be familiar with things like dashboards and PowerPoint and, you know, other things. It's just basic table stakes nowadays relative to, you know, when I started my career 20 years ago. I would say that, like, technology, when I first started my career, you know, I was comfortable in coding and BASIC and, you know, back early days, C++. And that always felt like gave me an edge because it was more like the fear factor of technology had been removed as opposed to there's actually something I could do that would be different or unique.
Well, I know that because I came in with that technological comfort level, you know, one of the biggest benefits I think came from that was that my peers were always afraid to touch this button or that button because something was going to blow up or you'd encounter the blue screen of death. And I had more knowledge about what it really took to break things, you know, so I wasn't so afraid to try things. And I think that has kind of led to a comfort, a confidence and a curiosity throughout my career where, you know, there's got to be more to learn. There's got to be more to try if you're not afraid to mess things up. You know, I know that one big narrative now is, you know, the not having a fear of failure, taking risks because that's where you grow. And I think that's where that fits for me.
Yeah, that's a, it's a really interesting, it's an interesting topic. I hadn't actually thought of it exactly in this way before, but it's almost like you remove the, I don't know how excuse from the arsenal of things that keeps you, that holds you back from doing something. The reality is that, you know, being able to create something in code, that it just enables, even if it's as simple as print hello world, it just empowers you in a unique way so that you have the confidence to, I think, branch out and try new stuff and then understand that the underpinnings of the new, whether even if it's new sectors, like between financial services and market research, you can start understanding the systems that, that support both of those and the overall commonality between them, as well as leverage the differences between. I know it's a far reach, but I really do think installing the command line or the creation of software is a really good way to help build confidence at an individual level.
It really is. Anytime you can do put something in and know whether it's going to work or not work right away. You know, that was one of the things I loved about, you know, that that side of technology is it's either right or it's wrong. It's either going to work or it's not. And then you just get into the dig into the details and figure out why it's not working and fix it.
Totally. Yeah. It's like this, it's almost like the exact, it's a, it's an accelerated version of starting a company or starting anything new in life. And right. Cause you're able to just quickly iterate, discover your problem and then kind of move on from there. So I'd like to talk a little bit about this major shift that you, I think you've gone through. You spent much of your early career in the financial sector. How did you wind up finding yourself in market research?
Well, initially, well, like anybody, many people who start their careers in the Detroit area, they start out with something automotive. And my automotive early experience was in marketing and advertising for some of the automotive advertising agencies. And some of them were nice, big, full service agencies where I got a lot of experience in project managing traditional advertising and print production, and even dabbled a little bit in instructional design and the logistics of putting on training events on a large scale. What was great about that for me is it really supported flexibility and the gig economy. And through the connections you make throughout your career, opportunities opened up. And that allowed me to put my family first for that period of my life. Really, the requirements that I had for taking a position in that time frame was that it be flexible and allow me to do that family first focus, and that it would use my degree and help me to build my resume, even in this time when I wasn't an all 100% full-time worker. And through that, you kind of follow where the connections lead you. And so I made it from automotive advertising into automotive financial services into the commercial lender, Crestmark, where I was the vice president in marketing. So that was the career evolution up to that point. Once I was at Crestmark, I started taking on more responsibility and it led to more hours and less flexibility. And when I sat back and realized that I'm now in a full-time job and my requirements for the job, now that it's taking my full time, are a little different than they were before. So I wanted to make sure that it allowed me growth and some things that I was really passionate about and interested in. And so I started looking around and thinking, what did that mean for me? And at Crestmark, one of the things that I was able to dabble in a little bit was Google Analytics. You realize when you're in marketing and advertising, there's very little that's really measurable. You know, a lot of decisions are made on gut instinct and, hey, I think this looks good and this is probably going to, you know, reach the people we want it to reach, but not really measurable KPIs. And so Google Analytics kind of opened my eyes to this new world of being able to really pinpoint how many people are seeing this, who it's reaching, you know, and some of the audience demographics around that. I also stepped back and looked at other organizations and how they do things. And one of, I've always been a huge fan of Disney, for example. And one of the things I love about the Disney experience is that you go I take my family and we go and we have a good time and things run smoothly and we go home with a great experience. We'll go however long, you know, it is. We'll get there again on a later trip. And it's even smoother and even more fun. And they've found some snags along the way that you didn't even realize were there, but they found them and they fixed them. And so your next trip is even better. I wanted to find a way to live in that space, the finding, you know, doing the gathering the information to find the issues and then being able to communicate the issues and fix them. So the combination of the two of those led me to going and getting comfortable with data and going to get my master's in data analytics, not knowing where that was going to take me, but knowing that it might satisfy both of those curiosities and hopefully something would open up. Through the time I was getting my degree, I met through a mutual contact, the vice president of data and analytics here for the Pistons. Through building that relationship, found out that they were thinking of reopening a research position that had been closed for probably about a year due to someone leaving and not being replaced, and decided to give that a try.
That's super interesting. So you literally just stepped out and invested in yourself to, you know, learn data analytics prior to having that job lined up.
Yeah, and it was a really intensive one-year degree program where my husband was a single father for most of the year because I was at work at my previous role, going from there to class, going from there home to do homework until the middle of the night, getting up the next day to go to work because my employer at that time wasn't aware or supportive of the degree I was getting because I really was working toward that degree to find new opportunities. Didn't know what that new opportunity was going to be, but we all committed to helping me get through that.
So what has been one of your largest challenges as somebody who's relatively new to the market research space?
Coming into this role with not much knowledge of what market research actually was, my challenge was learning. Because the role had been vacant, there wasn't a lot of information left behind for me to pick up and take forward and learn from the previous person in this role. So sitting in my office, there wasn't, you know, anybody who I could walk across the room or across the department and say, hey, can you tell me how this should be done? There was a lot of trial and error and just research on my own part kind of made me comfortable with the fact that I was in the right place because the research to learn research was fun. Read all the white papers I could get my hands on, listen to podcasts, watch webinars and try to fill in the blanks of knowledge. So that's what my challenge was and kind of how I tried to mitigate it.
I really think this is an interesting point. What was the very, do you remember the first research project you did? Like, was it an online survey or was it focus groups or?
It was an online survey. Yeah, we have a DIY survey portal here. So a lot of the things that I'm still currently working on, I inherited from a research plan that they have that kind of walks through some surveys that are conducted through the NBA that many teams participate in. But we project manage them here at the team level to distribute them through our e-marketing team to our fans, mostly people we already have in our database. And so it was part of my first experience where doing the project management on some of those to dig into third-party data providers that we have, like a Scarborough Research, to do demographic-type research on to support our corporate partnerships team to find which partners would be a best fit for us based on the demographics of our fan base. And that was fun because that was more of a technology thing, right? That was a tool that you could use to do things with technology. So figuring out how to do that and then how to use our DIY survey portal, those were like new toys for me. It was really fun to dig in. And I think I've squeezed as much functionality out of those tools as anybody, you know, possibly could through my learning, you know, just digging into little corners of the functionality to see what it does, how we could use it here, how this fits with what we're already doing, how it could enhance what we're already doing.
I get so excited around the actual operational consideration of research, which makes me weird. You know, the block and tackling of the consumer insight, like how you gather that information and in a useful way and then analyze it for really, you know, fast business decisions, for me is really exciting stuff. Have you found your velocity or the speed by which you're able to get to the insights has been improving over time, or has it hit a ceiling?
I think the velocity is increasing. And I think that as it's more well accepted and well received throughout the organization, they're realizing what research can bring to help with business decisions. And I'm being able to be more and more busy with requests. The research plan that I inherited when I started was, like I said, a series of projects that were, you know, encouraged by the NBA, as well as some profile updates that we did through Scarborough Research and some of other information that we append to our CRM data. It was a full calendar throughout the year, but nothing really tied it together. So one of the things that I was really excited to do when I got here was to pull it together in a cohesive way so that we could figure out what questions we were answering with the research, right? So I just recently developed what I'll call my own brochure. I put together a customer insights process that kind of is the umbrella for all of the research we're doing, and answering about 6 questions with these 20 some projects that we do. So we're figuring out who our customers are, who both our fans and our partners, corporate partners, through some of the research projects that we do. We're looking at how are we reaching them. And with that, I get access to TV and radio ratings and social media measures. What their experience is here? What do they think of us? And we do some brand health studies, some post-event surveys, fan loyalty tracker that we send out to our members to take the temperature of what they're thinking of us. Do our sponsorships benefit them? And so we do some studies specifically around how our sponsors are benefiting from reaching our fans, with the exposure that they're getting, the value they're getting, the actual dollar value they're getting back from that sponsorship, and then recapping for them at the end of the year, as well as reaching out to our fans and saying, you know, what do you think of these sponsors? Are you benefiting from the Pistons having these sponsorships? And then how can we grow? So how can I support the ticket sales team, even with prospecting surveys or campaign support, and working with the marketing and communications group to the effectiveness of some of their communications? And then I've also gotten involved with, so what is our culture, is the last question that I've really got in my brochure. And I've gotten involved with the employee survey annually, and then pulse surveys we'll put together throughout the year to kind of take the temperature as we make changes internally. So to be able to pull all of that together has only created, I think, more interest in what research and insights can be provided by our group.
Okay, that is super powerful. I mean, creating this really clear view of the brand through the eyes of the customer, leveraging market research, I mean, that is such a hole in one. And kind of piggybacking on what you said before, as you educate the executive staff on how market research can be employed for better decision making, I'm remembering my conversation with Lori Ivintosh of GoDaddy, where she said the executive is going to make a decision anyway. I sure as hell better deliver the insight so that it's the right one.
Yep. It's been great that, you know, as we go into some business planning, even for next season, I've been invited to participate in more of those discussions, as they're looking to have some data-driven decisions about how to approach our season ticket members who would like to, you know, have them stay in a membership, or how do we reach new people to have them come join the team as single game buyers or season ticket members.
The scorecard, I'm going to call it that because you're in sports, that you've got, you know, for the brand. When you think about feeding back the data to sponsors and customers, where you talked about how you recap, you know, what were the benefits, you know, did they find them useful, et cetera. Are you seeing improved lift or improved buy-in from those sponsors? And I'm actually thinking about something you referenced very early on, which is your experience at Disney, how, you know, you'll go to their campus and you'll have a really nice time. And then, you know, you'll come back another time and it's even better somehow, right? And the little hiccups or what have you have been solved that you didn't even recognize, which of course reinforces that brand. You seeing that sort of behavior manifest itself?
Yes, our sponsors have definitely seen a benefit and a lift from being involved with the Pistons. I work with the account team, the partnership team, to identify which sponsors to focus on for each season. That information gets reported back many times to the partner, and I have gotten to be a part of those conversations and to share the information myself, which was another learning, growing experience that I really enjoyed to share not only the industry-wide statistics that says, you know, here's what how you're going to benefit from being a part of a sponsorship, but also the specific our fans are telling us in this specific study that they are more likely to engage with your brand because you're associated with the team.
So about what proportion of your work, your research work, is done internally versus through partners externally?
So with my learning curve in market research, I've been kind of selfish with a lot of the things that we do. If there wasn't already a partnership in place to conduct the study, I really tried to, at this point, since I am a marketing research department of one, do it myself so that I can get comfortable with the technology, with the reasons behind the research, instead of just jumping in to having a partner support me in it. So a lot of the NBA studies that we were already on the books, we work with outside partners on those. And those are building great relationships with those vendors has been really enjoyable for me. But as, you know, business questions come up internally, I always take a stab at it first. And I haven't yet, I know as our research, the need for research internally grows, I will eventually run out of knowledge and time to do it all myself. But at this point, I've really enjoyed learning and trying and doing and being able to provide insights. It's great that my newness to this role isn't a secret, right? So I came in with a lot of background in business and a degree in analytics, but research was something I was learning. So it's been great that as a question, if a business question comes up, I have been given the freedom to learn the common methodologies, figure out if my tools are capable of doing that, and then conduct the study myself, and then provide the information, you know, at the management or executive level to help answer those questions. And I think there's been, you know, I haven't had to dedicate so much time to the learning that it's stalled the decision-making, you know. I think having to go outside and then teach a vendor what our problem was and then, you know, what we were looking to get out of it, the time frame probably would have been similar, so.
I was just speaking with Stacey Walker at Adobe, and she was talking to me, this is after the interview, sort of about the same issue, how, you know, for her, it's more useful having somebody internally managing the research just because they're already up to speed on the actual implication. And if they are the ones executing against the research, then they can better understand the storytelling aspects or apply the storytelling to the stakeholders internally for faster adoption of the insights. There's clear efficiency gains by doing the research internally. And I'm seeing more brands look to move stuff from external vendors to internal vendors just because it helps control and improve velocity, which means that they're adopting tools to get work done faster or whatever. Do you have a research mentor, somebody that you have cultivated a relationship with, where you ask them for recommendations, et cetera, whether it's on methodologies or vendors?
Not at this point, no. That is one of the things that I've been trying to build. But I'm finding that most people, when they look at someone at my stage in their career, they expect them to already have some good experience in research. And most of the mentoring aspects, the narrative I see around mentoring these days in looking to find one is people at this stage in their career think, well, we've been in market research a long time and there's a lot of changes happening. So we're going to look to support these new kids that are coming out of school with these new degrees that are being offered at the universities in market research and mentor them so that, you know, on the new technology, so they can use that knowledge of the new technology and their new ideas, but gain some of our experience. And so it's been hard for me, and I don't know if it's because I'm not generally a comfortable question asker, to connect with somebody who is a good resource. In the last month, I've been doing much better at it. I've found some great resources through some of the conferences I've been at. So I'm building that network now. But typically, I've done all of my research online through the white papers and the webinars and the podcasts. And I've gotten some digital mentors like you and some of the other people in the field who I've been following, like Kristen Luck and Ray Pointer, and you know, just some others that every time that name comes up, I feel like that's really good information and I should pay attention and try to learn from that. So that's mostly how my learning has gone mentor-wise.
What shows did you attend in 2018?
The one big one that I was able to get away and go to was the Corporate Researcher Conference for the Insights Association. And then locally, the Detroit chapter of the American Marketing Association has a market research arm that they have smaller meetings sporadically. So I was able to get to one of those as well and made some great contacts there.
Yeah, local chapters are gold mine. I think they're oftentimes overlooked, especially by younger researchers. I tell you what, it is such a great place to meet up and coming researchers as well as seasoned vets who can, you know, just help answer questions even that I have. I oftentimes will use it as a reference point when things come up.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of the things I have found that's difficult is that this role isn't always called the same thing, right, within different organizations. So as you are looking for, you know, someone to help with research, you don't know exactly who to reach out to or who to look up on LinkedIn or that kind of thing. Like I know, I think that my role is fairly unique even among MBA teams because they all participate in research, but I don't know that many of them have one point person that supports, you know, the ticket sales and the guest experience operations group and the, you know, marketing communications and everybody all under one umbrella. So even within the NBA, I'm not always sure specifically who to reach out to at another team even for advice.
Right. No, it makes sense. There's a local company here in Central California called Reese Foods, and they have a head of research. She's a one woman shop in this case, but it's a $1 billion company, right? So it's a really large company and she spends a lot of money on research. I put a lot in quotation marks because it's all relative, but she's the one that's actually executing the projects. And she'll use vendors for specialty things like turf analysis or a conjoint study or whatever. But in generally speaking, she's the one that's conducting the research and very successfully as well. And it's empowering this brand. Like I said, I mean, it's growing significantly, double digits and massive. And it's interesting to me that you do have that consolidation inside of you know, into a single person team. Whereas most companies that are that large would have potentially multiple people fulfilling that function.
Right. Or the being able to have access to all of it. So when a conversation happens in, you know, the guest experience space, I am aware of a study that was done over in the marketing group on the brand health to see how we're perceived, right? So that I can kind of pull that information together and help both parties. You know, one of the things that I did early on when I was here was realize that most of our research was happening among people who are already in our database, already buying tickets from us, you know, without knowing what I was really thinking or what, you know, that panels actually existed. I reached out to people who are already season ticket numbers, people who were single game buyers, people who were, you know, received our newsletter and then were social media followers. And I said, hey, would you guys agree to participate in research on an ongoing basis as needed? And I got, you know, a significant amount of people who raised their hand and said, yeah, you know, and it's different with a sports team because people just want to be a part of it, right? They want to be able to have input and feel connected to the team. Being able to reach all of the different groups within the organization, if somebody has a real quick turnaround need, I can send that question out to what we call our Pistons fan forum, get the feedback and respond, you know, right away through a what you could call a panel that I manage.
Do you have any specific technology that you've employed to handle this custom panel?
Within our DIY survey platform, I found some functionality that helps manage the panel, and it records and keeps all of that information. And then, you know, with the surveys that I conduct through there, we send out through our e-marketing platform. So
what is one gap that you see in the market that you wish either a market research technology or a service provider would solve?
There are so many vendors doing such great things out there. I don't know that I would be able to specifically identify a gap because I'm still learning what is needed, the pieces of the puzzle that that I don't already have answers to. But I do think that if some of those some of the solutions could be, there could be a standard communication about what problems they're hoping to solve within my organization and how specifically they could help me. Would be, it's not really a technology question as much as it is a communication question, you know, because I do have people calling me many times to offer their services to me, but I'm really not sure how they fit as a solution to my problems.
Yeah, got it. That makes sense. And it's almost like the lack of social validation isn't quite there in some early stage companies. And then, you know, of course, the actual application to your problems. That's where I think market research needs to be really good at listening, you know, employing our core technology, our core IP, which is exactly listening, consuming that consumer viewpoint, and then understanding what is intended, you know, what the application is. And then, you know, that would help us a lot in formulating exactly how are we applicable, how can we solve, or where can we add value for the specific end user. So we have a couple of people that have posed questions on LinkedIn when I posted a few moments ago about, you know, my interview with you. Is it all right if I read a couple of them?
Sure.
All right. So the first one is from Mario. How are the Detroit Pistons adjusting their marketing strategies given the rapidly changing demographic makeup of Detroit?
We have even a greater changing demographic, in not only in that Detroit is going through a fantastic renaissance right now, growing, becoming an exciting place to go and live much more than it has been in, you know, over the previous decade. So along with the fact that it's changing and growing and becoming more probably as a resident base, more millennial, we also moved our team, right? So we used to play out in the northern suburbs of Detroit. And within the last years, this is our second season playing in downtown Detroit. So we've had to make some adjustments as far as, you know, who we have in our season ticket base, because we've got some fans who aren't haven't followed us down there. Because the arena moved, I think it's like probably a 40-minute longer drive for people who are coming from the northern suburb area. But also being able to reach new people downtown who weren't willing to make the drive out, you know. So it's been a great change for us in that we've been able to pick up a lot of excitement and be part of what's going on down there. Our marketing and advertising really centers around the excitement of being at a game and the excitement of following the team. It's interesting, I find, in sports where you have a fan base and your fan base is going to be your fan base and they really want to come and enjoy the team. But we also get now in the new arena to communicate the benefits and the excitement of the state-of-the-art arena we're now playing in.
Awesome. And this question from Aaron Walton. I'm curious if her team was involved at all in measuring Drummond's free throw shooting statistics in practice or personal workouts. He's gone from 35% to over 60% in just 2 to 3 years.
It has been an amazing improvement. It's been fun to watch. But my research is more on the business of basketball instead of the actual athletes of, on the team. So, but we in Detroit really have appreciated Andre's free throw improvement.
That's awesome. My guest today has been Shelley Boren, research manager at the Detroit Pistons. Shelley, thanks very much for being on the Happy Market Research Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Jamin.
And thank you, everyone, who's been listening on iTunes and Google Play, as well as Spotify. Of course, your feedback and reviews on these platforms enables us to grow. It is our oxygen. Please keep it coming. Have a wonderful day. On next week's episode, we interview Nancy Hernan, CEO and co-founder of G3 Translate. You'll want to tune into this inspiring story. She'll walk us through her journey of navigating personal tragedy, starting over in a new city, and ultimately creating one of today's top translation firms in market research. There's a lot for you to gain, nothing to lose. Talk to you soon.